Yep, he gets the shorty, and that's also your game winner, as Winnipeg ends up holding on to beat the Sens by a score of 3-2, and now Ottawa goes out on the road for four in a row, starting Saturday afternoon in Montreal. It's a 4 o'clock faceoff versus the Habs, and then out west for games in Calgary and Vancouver next week. All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. J.R. Hammer, Eric Macromella, our TSN legal analyst, has been sitting in for the past hour. We have put him through the ringer. We hopefully have him in a slightly better mood. He did not sleep last night after his Habs lost to the Flames 4-1.
And he's got a also because I went to bed late because then I watched the Sens game. Plus, I had two cigars, so I stunk. I couldn't sleep because I just smelled so bad. So then I took a shower because my wife has a rule. If you smoke a cigar, you have to burn your clothes,
right,
shower at the neighbor's house, and then not touch me for 10 years. So I'm pleased to report we're right on schedule.
All good. All right. Well, listen, take a break because I had an early morning visit with Pierre Maguire from After 6 this morning. Pierre was on his way or at the airport in St. Louis. He did the Colorado-St. Louis game last night. So that's where we began a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group by asking him about his game, a 4-3 win by the Avalanche.
That was some kind of hockey game. Colorado was totally in charge probably for the first 40 minutes of that game. And then it was total role reversal the last 20. Just an unbelievable performance by both teams. If that's a playoff series, that'll be a whole lot of fun, Jay. It really will be. I think the biggest thing when you watch Colorado play is just their speed and their skill, and it's four lines deep. Subtle little additions at the trade deadline, especially Carl Soderberg coming over from Chicago. It's really impressive to watch them play. I'm kind of blown away by just how deep the team is, and they're going to be a handful for everybody. Devin Dubnyk played last night, not Philip Grubauer, who was a late scratch because of COVID protocol, JR. And I would say, based on everything John Forslund and I heard last night, my play-by-play partner, Grubauer might not play for the next 2 weeks. So that's an issue. But they're very fortunate. They were able to go out and obviously pretty tough.
On Devin Dubnyk, if he has to play the next 2 weeks, we didn't remember really talked about at the trade deadline his acquisition and why Colorado felt the need to add another body in net after adding Johansson from Buffalo as well.
Well, I just think that they weren't really comfortable with Johansson being the backup. It's a young guy that really doesn't have a lot of NHL experience. So I think more than anything else, Joe Sakic was just trying to make sure that he insured his hand. He said something really strong the other day, JR, that I thought was rather poignant, and the truth of the matter is Joe doesn't say a lot, but when he talks, people listen, and then Joe just said, listen, we're all in, we're going for it, and that you could see by some of his acquisitions and what he's been able to do that they think this is a year where they have a legitimate chance to win the Cup, and they really have gone out and tried to go for it.
You mentioned that Grubauer, based on what you were hearing last night, could be out for 2 weeks, so does that indicate that he's had a positive COVID test?
I would imagine if that's what they're saying. Now, I don't know that, but
right,
that's why I use the term protocol, and I think it's important to do that. You don't know on a lot of these things. So that's how it was phrased by the league, and that's what the scuttlebutt was. We're not allowed down from other people that are around the team, and what we were told is there's a potential for him to be out for 2 weeks.
Okay. Is there any worry at all that if there is a positive there, as far as the rest of the team goes?
Nobody said anything about it. You know, they already have Bo and Byram in COVID protocols, and so that's one person. And they also yesterday said that they had a member of their traveling party that was in COVID protocol. So we don't know much more than that. That's all we really know.
It's always it's the thin edge of the wedge, right, we're seeing. And it's we'll talk about the Vancouver situation here in just a second. But it has gotten a little bit better with especially the U.S.-based teams after a struggle earlier in the year. They seem to have, for the most part, righted the ship. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that everything works out well in Colorado as well. Do you look at St. Louis? You mentioned it's a decent possibility. These two teams will meet in the first round of the playoffs. Do you look at the Blues as still a team that's capable, if everything goes right, of being able to win a series against a team as good as Colorado?
I think so. I think the biggest thing is they're just going to have to get real super goaltending from Binnington, obviously. They're going to have to keep it together in terms of injuries, and Ryan O'Reilly's going to have to play at the same level he did when he won the Conn Smythe in 2019. I will tell you this, O'Reilly was excellent last night. He wasn't a little bit good. He was really good. So that's part of it, is just paying attention to certain elements of their team. And if those elements stay healthy and play the same way they're capable of, then I think they have a chance. But, again, I would say that any series Colorado goes into, as long as they're healthy, they'll be the favorite.
Right, absolutely. All right, we'll talk about some of the other games. I wanted to quickly touch on Ottawa's game last night. And I know you read the reports, but you had your own game to do.
Yeah.
Jacob Bernard-Docker ends up getting into the game. He wasn't scheduled to, but Nikita Zaitsev wasn't able to go. He goes into the game, and he comes as advertised, Pierre. I tell you what, just a real steady player. Does not come across as nervous. They kind of spotted him in and out, but he ends up playing over 15 minutes in the game. If the film today shows what the coaching staff saw in live time last night, do you think that he, in all probability, stays in now for most of the rest of the season? Is that the right way to play it?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. That's why I was so bullish on the player going back a few years. Absolutely, and I think the film will play out the proper way, not having seen the game, full disclosure and transparency. But I would just say that, I'd be shocked if they did anything that wasn't more proactive towards him. He's going to be a major part, I think, of their long-term plan, and they need to get him as many reps as possible to try to get him up to speed so that he's ready to hit the ground running next year.
Yeah, Matt Murray ends up starting the game for the first time in more than a month. He was pretty solid, but you can still see that the glove hand in particular, Pierre, the two goals in the third period both went over the glove, that's still a work in progress. How does a goal, and especially a new goalie coach in this situation, how do you work on just the fundamentals of a guy who's been playing a position for however, you know, it's 20 years of his life or whatever, of changing something that I'm sure is just ingrained? It's almost autopilot how he holds his hand and those sorts of things.
Henrik Lundqvist, for the longest period of time, was obviously an elite goaltender in the league, but they wanted to change him. And one of the things Hank used to do is stay really deep in the net. And so Benoit Allaire, the goalie coach with the New York Rangers, got Hank to start coming out and challenging more and more, and he became more aggressive. And I think it played well for Henrik Lundqvist, and I think the same thing with Matt Murray. Once you get him to understand that the glove positioning is wrong or the angle play is wrong, you got to show him on tape. A picture's worth a thousand words for those guys. And if you do that and sell them the right way, then potentially he'll be able to make the changes. In the reports that I read, and I like this soundbite or quote from DJ Smith, he said, listen, the guy was solid in goal, played well. We also want to get him stuff to work on so that he needs to be better at in the off season. So, I think that's good. I think Ottawa is being really proactive in terms of how they're trying to deal with all their different situations, and goal is one of them. There's no question.
Nick Paul, who has been arguably Ottawa's best player overall in consistency, the only thing he hasn't been able to do this year, Pierre, is score goals. And he finally got one last night. First time since Valentine's Day he scored a goal, but has shown himself to be a really valuable foot soldier. Should people who follow the team, should they really care much at all about statistics for a guy like a Nick Paul? Do they matter at all?
Statistics matter, but they don't matter as much as everybody thinks, especially if you got a player like that that's a big body that can do a lot of good things in terms of board play, corner play, slot area play, diligence defensively. Those things matter too, and coaches are looking for that all the time. Not everybody's going to be the lead singer of the band. You got to have support players, too, and Nick Paul is one of those guys. I'd say Nick Paul and Connor Brown have been two of the most consistent players the Ottawa Senators have had all year.
Yeah, unfortunately for Connor Brown, Pierre, his goal-scoring streak came to an end last night. Good things must come to an end. He had one shot on goal, and it wasn't a terrific scoring chance, and I think three attempts on the night. But I did want to touch upon Victor Mete as well, who skated almost 15 minutes, which was five more than he played the other night. Now, that was probably in part because Jacob Bernard-Docker played, and they kind of spotted him in and out a little bit. But tell you what, and it may have been the jerseys. The Sens were wearing the reds last night, Pierre, with black numbers, so it was hard to tell the numbers sometimes of the players. But he and Erik Brännström, as two smaller left-shot defensemen, look so much alike. It's incredible. Like they look like carbon copies of each other when you're watching through a television screen. It's really, really weird.
The one thing that you'll see over time, I think, is Brännström will produce more points than Mete. I think Mete will be more stout defensively in terms of physicality. But I think if you just measure it on points, you'll see that a long term, I think Brännström will score more. Mete will probably defend just a little bit better.
All right. Ottawa moves on to Montreal on Saturday. The Habs are coming off a loss to Calgary last night, 4-1. So the Flames are now within 4 points. As you can imagine, Pierre, there's a lot of angst in Montreal after a loss. They still have the three games in hand. How nervous should a Montreal fan be right now about their team?
I think very. You know, this is not exactly what they were thinking when they made the coaching change. And they, not this summer, when they spent over $100 million in free agency and trade acquisitions, this is not what they were expecting. So, no, obviously I think there's going to be some nervous energy there. I think the team is a lot better than what their record shows. So they're going to have to figure this out. They got a lot of games left at Calgary, as you know. Four games left, I think, coming up until April 26th. this is not going to be easy. You know, JR, three of those games are in Calgary after they play Edmonton. So Montreal's going to have to get on their horse here. This is not very good. It's a little bit like the Boston Bruins and the New York Rangers. I mean, the Bruins clearly can feel the Rangers on their back, and I think Montreal can clearly feel Calgary's on their back.
So the Habs have lost 4 out of 5. And that's the same time frame as Brendan Gallagher has been out of the lineup with the broken thumb. It's an easy kind of point A to point B conclusion to say, well, obviously, as Brendan Gallagher goes, the Montreal Canadiens. Is that too easy? Is it too easy to kind of associate those two, or is there something to that?
No, there's something to it. It's not easy. There's something to it, JR. And Brendan is really an important guy with that organization. It's just the template that he creates every single game because of the hustle, the bustle, the physicality, the desire to get to the net, the ability to score greasy goals, create momentum for the team through physical play. He's just a really important guy. And I'll just tell you, I had a bad feeling when he got hurt. I know we talked about it on the show, and the more I watch them, the more you can see just how important Brendan Gallagher is to the well-being of the Montreal Canadiens.
Last night, I mean, Shea Weber had a giveaway which led to a Calgary goal, but just as an overall on this season, either throughout the season or maybe more of late, what has been your thoughts on Shea Weber's play this season?
It's been okay. There have been parts at the beginning of the year where I thought Shea was really good. He and Ben Chiarot were outstanding together as a tandem. And then you could see kind of injury and fatigue, you know, just little nicks and bruises because of how robust he plays, definitely affecting. Now, obviously, he's a little bit older, too, you know, in his mid-30s now. So part of that is just wear and tear and the amount of games. And so I understand there's probably some concern about where Shea is. But, at the beginning of the year, I thought he was playing like an A player. Now I'd say he's probably playing more like a B player, and he needs to get it back up. But I think you got to be realistic, too, and I just think fatigue is a big part of this, Jay. I really do.
One other note from last night. Marc-Andre Fleury gets the win in Vegas' victory over L.A. That's career win number 485. He's fourth all-time. He passes Ed Belfour with the victory last night. Everybody has been, you know, after Vegas was trying to get rid of him in the offseason, that was obviously a prudent move or a lucky move that they actually retained him given the injury issues with Robin Lehner. How do you think, let's project ahead, how do you think it, what do you think, and how does Vegas handle the goaltending after this season? Do you think they'll look to move Fleury again, or will they try to, he's got one more year left on his deal after this year.
And not only that, you got an expansion draft coming, so that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. It really will be. So I think that's the great unknown is the expansion draft, and I can't even come close to predicting that. But no, Marc-Andre, I know I told you this last year and I felt strongly about it. His behavior at the bubble in Edmonton was off the charts in a good way. Just, you know, all the disappointment and all the different stuff going on around their team and the situation with him getting pulled out and Robin Lehner being the starter, and he handled it so well. His teammates just adore him. I can't say enough good things about him. He's the ultimate pro in this league. He really is. He's just an unbelievable professional and a great gentleman. So whatever he wants to have happen, I hope happens his way, just because he's earned that. He's merited that.
Of course, Vegas, they can't lose any players in the expansion draft under the agreement, but we'll certainly see a goalie carousel for sure. How much longer do you think that he will want to play? Does he seem like the type of guy who's going to want to play 3, 4, 5 more years?
He wants to play, I think, as long as he's healthy and still playing at a high level. He loves the game. Now, again, it's hard to predict. You don't want to get in somebody's mind. I mean, I never thought Matt Niskanen would retire at 33. I never did, JR. I tell you what, he left $6 million on the table. I never thought he'd do that. So you never really can predict what guys are thinking. But I would say he'd like to probably play as long as he can.
All right, couple more for you. The Sabres officially have ruled out Jack Eichel for the rest of the season. He hasn't played since March the 7th. It's a herniated disc in his neck. It's a guess and it's speculation. But do you think that Jack Eichel ever plays another game for the Buffalo Sabres?
I can't even try to project that. I would say right now he's under contract to them, and who knows what's going to happen in the offseason there. So I just don't know the answer to that. But I didn't think that Jack was having a great year. In fact, I thought he was having a miserable year. I think Jack would probably tell you the same thing. So the truth is that Jack was probably not 100% when the season started, and you could see it in his play, and now they just got to go about getting him fixed.
Yep. I mean, you know him very well. You've watched him play for a lot of years. Yep. All indications are, Pierre, that they're going to have to, I don't know if start from scratch, but they're going to have to, again, at the very best, retool, if not rebuild in Buffalo. Do you think Jack Eichel's heart would be into being a part of another rebuild when he's been in one for most of his professional career?
I think it depends on how much confidence he has in the management group's direction, how much confidence he has in the coaching message, and who's going to be the next coach. If it's going to be Donnie Granato, then Jack's going to have to sit with Donnie and go over what the focus is. If it's not going to be Donnie, it's going to be somebody else, whomever the coach is. And I hope Donnie Granato gets a chance to keep it because he's done a really good job there. But whomever's in charge there is going to have to sit and talk with Jack. They really are, and sell him on the program. And if Jack doesn't like what he has to hear or they have to say, then they're going to have to move him. It's just that simple.
And I wanted to end with, I know you were busy yesterday with the game. Did you see or hear the comments of JT Miller in Vancouver regarding the situation there?
I did. I read them.
Yeah.
I absolutely did.
Yeah. And just to bring everybody up to date who might not have, he said, and he was one of the few Canucks that didn't end up getting COVID in the gigantic outbreak with that team. He says, I don't feel ready to play hockey at all. He says, this has nothing to do with hockey. To be brutally honest, we're going to need more time than this to come back and play hockey. Even the guys that didn't get it aren't ready. The Canucks are scheduled to have their first practice today. They're scheduled to have their first game tomorrow to start 19-31. Now, NHL and the PA are going to meet today with, I guess, it's still an outside possibility. They may push back this schedule. Do you think it's right that the NHL is scheduling the Canucks to play with this little preparation time with all these guys coming back from COVID protocol?
No, because you're asking for injury. You're asking for injury, and you're ruining competitive balance. It's going to be unbelievably difficult for them to be able to practice today and play tomorrow based on everything that's gone on. I felt terrible for those players and their families that are going through that stuff out there, and it couldn't have been a lot of fun, and it can't be a lot of fun right now. So hopefully they'll be able to meet the NHL and the NHLPA and try to figure something out here. This is just too big an ask, I think.
Yeah, we'll find out more today. But, yeah, it seems like this could change based on the way the talk has gone in the last 24 hours. But we'll find out. All right, we'll let you go on that note. Now you got a plane to catch. Really appreciate the early morning visit, as always. And we'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, JR. I'll watch the game on tape when I get on the plane. I'll have a better idea for you what the battle was all about.
All good, Pierre. Appreciate the time.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back, 8:40 on this Thursday morning. JR Hammer and Eric Macromello, our TSN legal analyst, is with us. By the way, was able to put his feet up for the last 40 minutes while we replayed our early morning Pierre Maguire interview, but the meter was running the entire time, as any good lawyer would do.
It was weird. I know it was pre-taped because I listened to it live, but I was still asking Pierre questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good thing we set your mic off.
He wasn't responding, and I thought that was really, really rude.
Yeah.
You and I are doing this show via Zoom, as you know. I'm in my 14-car garage. And once again, Zoom reminds me of every single day, JR. Good hair day, bad face day. And I got to tell you, Zoom, you can go to hell. I've had enough.
Are you going to have enough material left for 6 o'clock tonight? Because you're rolling right back in here with Offside tonight at 6 o'clock.
I am. I've got a hit coming up at 9:05 on TSN 690. It's about a 25 or 30 minute hit I do with the guys there. There we just talk gibberish. And then for Offside, it's going to be another smash hit show, JR. It's going to be unprecedented in its level of quality and entertainment.
Oh, that sounds like no thought has gone into what's going to be on the show yet.
There's a reason why the show has over 42 billion listeners, more listeners than there are people on the planet. Think about that for a second. It sounds almost impossible.
But not quite.
Almost.
Not
no,
quite.
Almost.
Yeah. So I think we talked a little bit yesterday about the whole Deshaun Watson controversy, which continues to develop, it seems, hour by hour and day by day. So you will spend some time on that and maybe on this this Vancouver Canucks situation, depending on how that all plays itself out today?
Yeah. No, I'm just going to replay parts of this show.
Okay, all right, that sounds good as well. All right, and maybe you'll
Keep saying offside in the background.
Yeah, and maybe you'll be refueled with a little noontime visit down to Pico Pizza. Did you end up going yesterday or not?
No, I didn't go yesterday. The reason is I forgot I had purchased the barbecue chicken and had it in my fridge from Farm Boy. So I thought it was best that I continued to chip away at the barbecue chicken. Yes. First time I've done it. I thought it was a great idea. By the way, speaking of important moments, as we were talking today, I'm like, April 15th sounds like a familiar date. So I went in my email and it is close.
Yes.
April 14th, 2010 was my first segment on the station. You and I met along with a guy, I think his name was Degler. Was it Dave Degler?
Dave Daigle, yeah.
Dave Daigle. And I'm from Montreal, so I say Degler, obviously. And you say draft bust. And we met in his office. You were sitting to my right. You were wearing shorts, which was confusing because it was only spring. And the three of us chatted. And then the next day, I was on the air with Steve Lloyd talking Patrice Cormier's vicious hit on Michael Tam, who sent him into convulsions.
Wow. You remember that? The actual, what the first hit was about? That's impressive.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
As you brought up the name Patrice Cormier and then explained that, and it's like, oh, that is very, very fuzzy memories. Well, let's go back a little bit even further. Speaking of now, not to the day of the Patrice Cormier was yesterday. Today, 22 years ago today, April the 15th, 1999, what was then known as Corral Center, and the final game ever played in Canada by 199.
20 seconds to go. Fans are chanting thank you.
And from there, they just counted it down, didn't say anything further. Wayne Gretzky's final game in Canada was played right here in Ottawa on this day, April 15th, 1999. I have the front page of the Ottawa Citizen from the next day tacked up on my wall in my office because it's just a great photo of Wayne Gretzky. I keep very few mementos of my entire time being in the media and having the good opportunity to be at a lot of events. But in that picture of Wayne Gretzky, and it's just a typical Gretzky picture. It's kind of him putting his head down like he feels shame from having everybody applaud him. It was during the last TV timeout, and everybody, it's a standing ovation. And I was actually at the game, and I can actually see myself in the background. So Jungle Jim Jerome was kind enough at one point. I got I bought the picture from the Citizen, and I got Wayne Gretzky to sign it. So that's one of the few mementos that I have of my time. So that's a very cherished photo. But that happened, final game was on this day back in 1999. Now, were you in Ottawa at that point?
I was in Ottawa. Yeah, I was in Ottawa. I wasn't at the game, but I was watching the game like everybody else. And that photograph you referred to is kind of iconic, I guess, right? I mean, that's a photograph that when you see it, you know what it relates to. I actually pulled up the box score from the game. I was kind of curious.
Yeah.
Box score from the game. Adam Graves scores 38th goal. If you think Thomas Chabot plays a lot of minutes, Brian Leash played 32 minutes and 10 seconds. And that Sens team was, well, that was the team that finished first that year, right? And
yes.
Stacked. Alfredson, Bonk.
Radek Bonk, good player. I don't know if that constitutes stacked.
You're such a hater.
Now, and Radek's in town.
It's fun. Yeah, Bonk. When I met him, he was so shy. It was like pulling out words. I met him at an event. I'm like, hey, Radek, how's it going?
Yeah. No, very, very good guy. And what else is rare is you look at that box score. What else strikes you as you look? Don't look at the players. Just look at the box score. What strikes you as odd compared to hockey now? The game ended in a tie.
Yes. That's right.
It was a 2-2 tie. That's how that game ended. Wayne Gretzky's final game was a tie here in Canada 22 years ago. So I threw out on Twitter. I just asked people, were you there? What were your memories? Garth tweets back at me and says, don't remind me. I gave my tickets to a client. I'm sure. Listen, that Garth, that may have become, you give away tickets to an event like that. Maybe you've got a client for life. So
yeah, was it worth it? Was the payback?
Small, short-term pain for long-term gain may have been a payoff there, right? At the end of the day.
There is no such thing as a client for life.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. And many other people were there. Yeah, so it said, I was there for the game, sitting in the 200s. What else do I have here? I've got a bunch of them. I was there approximately 12 rows up behind the Rangers bench. Vividly remember a few Sens coming over to shake Gretzky's hand right in front of us at the end of the game. Hammer and I just watched the where we got that piece of tape, the end of the broadcast. And it's interesting, right as the game comes to an end and Gretzky is on the ice for that last shift, Igor Kravchuk skates up to him and asks Gretzky for his stick. And he gives him his stick from his last game in his last shift in Canada.
So, you think Gretzky's got wants a little take back from that too?
I think he's got
gets caught in the moment.
I think he's got enough mementos. I think he's good.
I think that's a 10-second take back. Igor, come on back here, buddy.
You know what? The great
stick back.
Igor Kravchuk is very active on social media. So you know what? We should reach out to him on social media and ask him if he still has the stick. It'd be interesting.
Well, actually, you know, JR, little known fact, his avatar on Twitter is the stick.
Is it? Okay.
Still got it.
Yeah.
Of course, that's right.
That did not end up being Wayne Gretzky's last game, by the way. He did have one more game to play. I think that game, if memory serves, was on a Thursday night here in Ottawa, and they had one final game. The Rangers didn't make the playoffs that year at Madison Square Garden. And I think they took on Pittsburgh because my memory of that last game, which was broadcast, was that he is spending some time with Jaromir Jagr. That was a bit of a almost a passing of the torch, it seemed like, because Jagr at that stage was arguably the best player in the game, and it was kind of like Gretzky is retiring and him coming over and go, okay, it's your game now. Whether you agree with that or not, certainly longevity-wise, Jagr certainly more than held his own. But I remember that kind of symbolism toward the end of that last game that he ever played that Sunday afternoon against Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay, so JR, here's a question for you. Based, you know, given the very difficult trivia questions you ask. Who was in nets in that game for the Sens?
In 1999?
That's correct. Well, for that game, yeah.
Yeah, for that game. Yeah. So we're
Rhodes or Tugger?
Yeah, I was going to say, if I had to guess, I'll say Damian Rhodes.
Unfortunately, that's correct.
Okay.
Not such a great question after all.
Yeah. Well, okay, what was his save percentage in the game, JR? Hello?
There were two goals on 31 shots?
Close, two goals on 23 shots.
Okay.
Right, that's fantastic.
All right, continue to share your thoughts, your memories of that. If you are at the game, if you're one of the fortunate people to be at that game, Wayne Gretzky's final game in Canada happened 22 years ago on this day. If we're going to go down the This Day in History road, by the way, it was this, not that it's as pleasant a memory, but it was on this day in 2013 was the Boston Marathon bombing was on this day in 2013, which, of course, was a horrific day. Of course, there's a senator's connection to that because the Boston Marathon is always held on a Monday. And the senators, I think, were supposed to play the Bruins that night. Remember, the game ended up being obviously postponed in the wake of all that. But it brings to mind, have you ever seen the movie that Mark Wahlberg, I think it was called, was it Patriot Day? Patriots
yes.
Day?
You got it.
Patriot
yes.
Day?
Yes.
That was a really, really good movie, I have to say. That's one of those ones that if it's on, as I'm flicking across, I'll end up stopping and watching. So I've seen that one a few times. That was a really, really, it's not a documentary, but it was a really good kind of a reenactment of the events of that day and the next few days as they try to track down the two guys that ended up being responsible.
I think, JR, the movie you stop and watch is Shawshank. That's the one, because it's always on TV, right? Mr. Dufresne.
Yeah, for me, I agree. For a lot of people, for sure, that one. For me, it's always The Fugitive, Tommy Lee Jones. Right? I want a hard target to Harrison Ford.
That's a
hard
solid one.
Target search of every outhouse, farmhouse, penthouse.
Outhouse.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's probably the one for me, The Fugitive. But Shawshank, for probably the majority of people. Yeah. Yeah.
I think for Patriot Day, too, they go into such detail in terms of a timeline of what these two people did from the beginning of the day to the end. You know that Hollywood loves to exaggerate a lot with these movies. But I think for that one, they probably got a lot of help in terms of information from FBI and news reports about the ongoings and the movements of those two, well, literally two kids. And what they did, that's what made the movie as compelling as it was, because they went deep.
Yeah.
It was a deep dive.
The other thing I remember is it was two brothers, right? Two brothers. The one brother ended up getting shot and killed within, a couple of days, I think they found him. But this went on for a period of, I remember when it ended. It ended on the Friday, because back then, the American cable channel we got wasn't Detroit like it is now. It was Boston. And so the search for these guys was like there was primetime coverage. And I remember on that Friday night, it was almost like the O.J. Bronco chase. On the Friday night, they had finally kind of tracked that the one brother down into a neighborhood, and he was hiding in a boat in a guy's backyard.
Right.
And I remember this was like 7 o'clock on a Friday night, and they've got that the Boston News Channel that I'm watching. The chopper is up above, and it's dark, and they've got the chopper light shining down on this boat, and you can see the cops are all surrounding him. And that kind of all played out in live time, like the O.J. Bronco chase did. I specifically remember that part of that. Well, so it lasted. I guess Boston Marathon was on a Monday. That was a Friday. So that was 4 days before they finally tracked that other guy down. So there
you go. Apart from the bombing itself, the ultimate act of cowardice, that is running away and hiding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So anyway, those are two big events that happened on this day, this April the 15th. We'll take a break. Come back. One final segment with Eric. By the way, after 9, we're going to get caught up on the latest of what's going on with the Canadian Football League. We are a little over a month away from what was supposed to be the opening game of the season. I don't think anybody's under any impression whatsoever that the CFL season is going to begin on time. What is the latest on when it is going to begin, if it is going to begin? We'll talk to TSN's Dave Naylor, of course, covers the CFL for TSN. He'll join us coming up after 9 o'clock. There apparently is maybe going to be an announcement next week about a postponement of the beginning of the season. So the very latest on that coming up with Dave Naylor after 9 o'clock. We get to more of your tweets as well and your texts at 12-1200 on the Sens 3-2 loss to Winnipeg. Practice day today at 11:30. Next game coming up Saturday afternoon in Montreal. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
More memories of Gretzky's last game in Canada on this day here in Ottawa in 1999. I was at the game, kind of bittersweet. The Sens did great, though, by making Gretzky the first, second, and third stars of the game. Wayne from Canada, I was at Gretzky's last game. He was awarded all three stars. Simply the best was played by Tina Turner as he skated around the ice after the game. Enjoy the show. That's from Wayne. Hey, boys, I was also there for Gretzky's last game in Canada. I worked Club Red, and what I remember most was seeing so many people crying. I've never seen so many grown-ups crying at one time. Cheers, boys. That comes from the other Todd. And on the Twitter machine, I was there with my grandfather, one of the only times I ever remember seeing him cry. I still have the ticket stub. And someone else, actually, Jimmy Stu, tweeted at me his ticket stub. So this is section 318, row F. So sixth row, 300 level. How much do you think the ticket was? 1999 to a row 6, 300 level Sens game.
I would say $246.
No. Man, it seems like a good memory when people complained about the price of tickets, didn't they? No, $15. $15. That if nothing else doesn't make you feel old, that makes you, wow. A 300-level hockey ticket to a Sens game was $15?
But is that what the ticket sold? Is that what it resold? Like, was that the resale value?
No, that's the ticket stub. I have no idea what it sold for.
Oh, the stub. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought you meant how much of the person. You know what? Speaking of seeing a lot of people cry, a lot of people did cry that night. There are two other instances where I saw more people cry. First one was when I took off my shirt at the public pool. That was the first time.
Yep.
Second time was the Expos final game in Montreal. And I remember it was the seventh inning, not the ninth, but the seventh inning. And it just got eerily quiet because that's when it sunk in. It's over. And I was with about seven or eight of my friends, which is surprising. I didn't know I had seven or eight friends to begin with. And everybody was crying.
You were obviously at that game.
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
I was.
Was that a, was that a full house?
A lot.
Was it a full house for it?
What? I mean, I can't hear you now, but your lips are moving.
Yeah. Was it a full house?
Hello?
Yeah, we may have lost him, which seems kind of fitting, such as the way that Zoom goes. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take him off before he swears. We got him. What we got?
Eric swear? Not a chance.
Yeah. Oh.
You're back.
Now we're back. Okay. We've got him back.
I missed it all. You know, I was saying that I went to a lot of Expos games. A lot. And my dad was the urologist for the Expos, which is why I never shook his hand or any of the hands of the Expos when I met them.
Hang on.
And my dad, yes?
I've never heard. What? Your dad? Is this a true story or is this one of the made-up things that you'll often throw out?
Well, let's be clear. My whole life is a lie, but this is actually true.
Your dad?
I don't even have kids.
Your dad was the urologist for the Montreal Expos.
Yeah, yeah. So my dad was a urologist in Montreal. He was a pretty prominent and high profile urologists, because there are only like four in the city, because no one wanted to be urologists. They all went into orthopedics. And so he worked a number of hospitals, and Dr. Larry Coughlin, who was the orthopedic surgeon for the Expos, and usually when the orthopedic surgeon for a sports team, you are the doctor. And he brought my dad on board. So my dad would come home, you know, with a baseball signed by Jeff Rudin and the rest of the Expos. And I did filing one summer just to meet the Expos. It was a really, really big deal. But my dad said, look, son, we're Egyptian. We have low self-esteem. I'm not going to ask for free tickets. I said, please, just get us tickets. I want to go to a game for free, because that's when you feel important. He said, fine. Here's the phone number for Ron McLean, who's was the Expos trainer.
Yeah.
And that was the number into the Expos clubhouse. Very exclusive, right? Very, very exclusive. So I was so nervous. I called in. I go, hi, Ron. My name is Eric Macromella, Dr. Macromella's son. And he said I could call and ask for a couple of tickets. Ron's response, I never heard of you. And he hung up. That was it.
So if your dad was the urologist for the Expos, would he have been the person that advocated, because this is a story, I don't know why, that's always stuck with me. Moises Alou used to talk about how he used to pee on his hands, right, to make them to make them hard to get through a baseball season. Was that at your dad's behest that he did?
No,
that?
I think that's an issue, I think, reserved more for player health and safety guy.
Okay.
Although the one player, and I met him, and so my dad passed away in 2007, actually in 2 days is the anniversary. He was passing, of all things, from prostate cancer. But he removed Tim Spear's testicle when Tim Spear had testicular cancer, or allegedly had it. And I met Tim
allegedly
at an Expo. Well, I don't know. Maybe my dad just removed it for because he was a funny guy. And when I met Tim, I introduced myself to him. I met him at this Expos event where I was giving a talk that I didn't prepare for. And I told him who I was. And he just gave me the biggest hug in the world. Then he asked how my dad was doing. I said, well, he had just passed away. And his face just dropped and hit the ground. So that was a nice moment too.
Wow, very nice. All right. There are so many more reasons why we have to have you on more often, like these things that, I have not heard that you discover.
And not only that, the
hidden side of Eric Macromella.
Tim Spear's testicle was my grade 5 science fair project.
Most of us did How Does a Tree Grow? We watched that over the course of a school year. You brought in Tim Spear's testicle.
Testicle. Well,
there we go. All right. Thanks, my friend. Really appreciate the visit again. We'll do it again soon.
I love you guys.
All right. There's Eric Macromella, our TSN legal analyst. Back tonight, by the way, 6 o'clock for another edition of Offside. We'll take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA, run down the scoreboard. The Sens lost 3-2 to Winnipeg. We'll come back. We'll talk more in the next hour about Thomas Chabot's night. That certainly has people talking. Jacob Bernard Docker's NHL debut. Matt Murray back in the net. We'll get into all of that. We'll get to more of your emails, texts, and tweets. And we'll talk to a little CFL football with Dave Naylor from TSN as well as we carry on here on this Thursday morning. Glad you're with us on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.